What's up, folks, and welcome to the Boss's Desk, where we look out for you. I'm your host, the Big Boss, and I'm here with the scholar of geek scholars, my man, the Professor. Hey, what's going on, brother? So, today is the day. We've been talking about it for the past couple of days, but today we're going to talk about the Spider-Man Homecoming movie. Let you guys know what we thought about it. I just checked on Box Office Mojo, and it looks like Spider-Man's already topping the weekend with like $115 million just on the opening weekend alone.
Yeah, it was like $115, $117 or something like that. Yeah. And then a lot more than that worldwide, I think, was even, like $250 or something like that, I thought I saw.
Yeah, I didn't even check the worldwide. I know it was bringing it in because
it was definitely doing well.
Yeah, I know people overseas really loved this one, so it just makes sense. Let me get that number real quick, see what we got.
Yeah, I mean, it's the character, man. Everybody wants to see that character, and they want to see it done right.
Yeah.
So, you know, people go and check it out. I know people want to complain, oh, they're doing this again, blah, blah, blah. I know it's the sixth Spider-Man movie at this point, but third guy. It's different now, and it's in the hands where it needs to be. It's in pretty much basically in Marvel's hands.
Yeah.
And Sony just kind of sitting back for the ride.
Yeah, and the good thing about it is they didn't waste time telling an origin story, so we didn't even have to worry about that.
Right.
You know, so that just dive right in the action, and it's good. So I'm looking at these numbers right now. 117 domestic, 139 foreign. So total, this movie worldwide over this past weekend, it's $256 million.
Yeah, see, that's impressive for an open weekend for any movie, let alone this particular one. But it's pretty impressive just by any movie, so it's definitely getting a good show.
Yeah, definitely.
I know it got my money twice, so.
Look, I'm trying to figure out another time this week I can go check it out again, because it was really good. Like, I'm hard-pressed to find things that I didn't like about this movie.
You know, I had a handful, like we were saying, like we were talking offline, I had a handful of nitpicky things that bugged me, but it was nothing that was bad enough to really take me out of the movie. I mean, look, this is one of those that I've been waiting for forever. You know, Spider-Man's always been probably my favorite character as far as the Marvel side goes. With all the comics that I bought when I was still buying them back in the day. You know, I buy a handful of X-Men here, a handful of Captain America here. Bought pretty much every Spider-Man title that they had. You know, at the time it was like seven of them. It was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, you know, so this is one of those ones that I've been waiting for forever to finally see the MCU get their hands on it, you know, and have them say, all right, look, you guys keep the rights. Let us do what we need to do, and we'll put the right movie out. And, you know, getting right into it. They certainly did, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I'm just hoping, like, other people will pick up on this and make that happen.
Yeah, by other people, he means Fox finally stopping playing around and letting go of the Fantastic Four.
You know me so well. You know me so well.
I do. Which, I mean, at this point, you'd be hard-pressed not to think that's what they're going to start doing. You know, you had to think that. You know, I know they floated out that little bit of, like, you know, we talked about on the last podcast about, you know, we're gonna reboot Fantastic Four again, but we're gonna make this one about the kids and the children of the Fantastic Four. I think it's a smokescreen.
Yeah, like, you haven't like made a successful Fantastic Four movie, period. So yeah, it's probably smokescreen. I mean, when they're saying family oriented, it probably means that Marvel's gonna get their hands on it and tell it the way that it needs to be told.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. I'm thinking phase four. Like, look, too late to get it into Infinity War, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You might be able to get it into whatever Avengers 4 is going to be. You know, that they don't have a name for, quote unquote, now, even though all the actors are all calling it Infinity War Part 2. You know, you might have enough time to figure it out to get them in there. It might be kind of tough. You'd have to really kind of start getting it now, because you'd have to do the casting. And because I don't know. Is it next year or the year after that the next movie is supposed to be? I guess it's the year after.
Yeah.
No.
Is it
the year after? Because Infinity War is next year.
Yeah, Infinity War is next year. So we got a couple before Infinity War comes out, and then there's like a couple in between the second Infinity War, or whatever they're calling that one.
So basically, at this point, it's Thor, Black Panther, Infinity War, and then I don't think it might be Captain Marvel, but I don't think so. Now I don't remember. I have to look at the timeline.
Yeah, I think Captain Marvel is right after Infinity War. I think they said something about setting her up in Infinity War and then doing the solo film or something.
Right. She's definitely in Infinity War. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
But let's just see. Homecoming, yeah. Thor, Black Panther, Infinity War. Okay. So Thor, Black Panther, Infinity War, Ant-Man and the Wasp will round out 2018 as far as the movies go.
Yeah.
Then 2019 starts with Captain Marvel, then goes to Avengers 4, then goes to Homecoming 2. So they're really going to be pushing that to go right away because that's only 2 years away.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if this page I'm checking out right here is right, which Hollywood Reporter, they're not usually too far off.
No, they're normally on it.
So yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be a lot of time. You'd have to get some stuff done now, you know, to be able to take it over and get it in. But if, you know, the trouble with Fox, and I know we're kind of getting off the point of what we were, you know, kind of getting together to talk about here, but
that's all right.
Real quick, the trouble with Fox is their last two superhero movies were actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Being Deadpool and Logan.
Yeah.
You know, so got two successes. So now they're kind of looking at themselves going, oh, we can do this. And the rest was looking at them going, no, you can't. Let it go. So I don't know. Hopefully they look at the success of Spider-Man, how well it's doing this weekend, how well it's going to do the next couple of weekends. Because I don't really think I'd have to look at the upcoming movies, but I can't imagine too many things that are coming out outside of maybe Dark Tower that are going to knock Spider-Man off for the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to keep going. And, you know, the one thing you can say about this movie that makes it even better is this is probably one of the few Marvel movies that you can pretty much take any kid to.
Yeah.
Like, you don't necessarily need it to be a teenager or someone, you know, 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. You can take a younger kid to see this because it's not, you know, yeah, there's probably a couple scenes that might freak him out a little bit with, the Vulture character, the way he flies around and whatnot, yeah, but there's really not a lot. That's a problem as far as the movie goes.
Yeah, I mean, it was really well done in the fact that, like, you know, it's going to get families out there and not just like for one viewing. This is going to be a multiple viewing type of movie. So yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if when Dark Tower comes out, it doesn't hit number one. Like, is Dark Tower coming out next weekend? Is it coming out this coming weekend?
The next week or the week after. It's pretty soon, I believe. It's one of the next couple of weekends.
If it's this weekend, anything that's coming out this weekend, I don't think it's going to take Spider-Man out of the top spot. If it's next weekend, possibly, but you'd be hard-pressed. Yeah.
It'll be tough for sure because the word's now getting around. You know, I think it's up to like 94 or something on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
So word's getting around. People really enjoy this movie and that's really good. Does it have its haters? Of course it does. Every movie's going to have their haters just because that's the way people are.
Right.
People can't admit when they actually like something. You know, they have to hate them. They can do that. But, you know, the majority of the people clearly have enjoyed the movie. So it's going to be tough to knock it down. Like I said, the only reason I think Dark Tower is because it's really anticipated.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of those old Stephen King books people have been waiting forever and a day to see come out in the movie.
Yeah.
I think one of the smart things they've done with Dark Tower is their trailers haven't really given away too much.
No, not at all.
The two trailers that I've seen so far, basically the same trailer, just recut in a different order.
Yeah.
Maybe one or two little bits here and there. So that's pretty smart.
Got a nice cast for that one. And, you know, it's good enough action. Yeah, it looks like it's going to shape up to be a pretty heavy contender for summer films.
I would say so. There's no doubt it's going to take some of the money away from Spider-Man, but I do think the movie was definitely good enough that it's going to keep pulling its weight and it's going to keep pulling people in for probably the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Will it catch Wonder Woman? That's tough. You know, Wonder Woman's kind of a different beast as far as how that came about. You know, I mean, there's a whole, you know, not to say the women don't go to see superhero movies because they do, but there's a whole different group of movie going women who've been waiting for the Wonder Woman movie forever. You know, it was the hero they got to look up to as a kid and they got to grow up with and they all dressed up for as Halloween, you know, and that's the one they were waiting for. So that's the one they all went to see. And I know it because I went to see it twice and the theater was definitely heavier on the women's side than it was on the men's side.
Yeah.
So and despite it'll be tough to catch that.
Yeah. Despite DC's like staunch stance on like trying to be gritty, like this was Wonder Woman was definitely more approachable from a family perspective. So
sure. Yeah. I mean, it was one of those where you'd want to question it a little bit depending on the age of the kid you were taking, but mm-hmm. you know, if you have kid in his early teens, it wouldn't be a problem to take them to see Wonder Woman.
Right.
You know, kid in its, you know, late single digits, 8 or 9, could be questionable, depending on, you know, your style of parenting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I'm still kind of holding out, like, that Fox will kind of get on the Sony bandwagon, and I'm taking the news like, hey, Josh Brolin's going to be playing Cable. Guardians 2 was able to get the character Ego, which originally belonged to Fox, in that movie. Like, little stuff like that makes me think, they're working some kind of deals in the back that we don't know. They just want to be tight-lipped about it until they do it. Now, this is all rumor and conjecture, but, you know, it's still fun to kind of think, like, hey, this could possibly happen.
But it's all the same stuff we saw, what, 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, true.
When everybody said, oh, Marvel's getting Spider-Man back. Marvel's getting Spider-Man. Everybody's like, no, they're not. It's not going to happen. And then just all of a sudden one day, oh, hey, by the way, we figured it out. Sony's going to work with us. We're going to make Spider-Man, and we're going to bring it back to the Marvel Universe. And everybody went, ah! Yep. At least I did.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what happened. So I there would be no surprise at all for me if all of a sudden, even, all right, so if it came up this coming weekend or next weekend in San Diego, I would be shocked if it came up then. That would surprise me.
Right.
But if somewhere in the next year, maybe two, we all of a sudden got this, you know, notification, oh, by the way, you know, Marvel's First Family, quote unquote, is coming back to the MCU and we're going to do the movies. There's not going to be any shock on my part because that's, we're kind of expecting it, I think, at this point. Could we be spoiled because it worked with Spider-Man? Yeah, possibly.
Possibly.
But, you know, I agree with you, and I've said it before. I think when they see what's going to happen with Spider-Man and all the money it's going to make and how well the movie was done and how good it looked and how much people liked it, I think they'll realize their better profit chances will be to make the same kind of deal that Sony did.
Right.
Put it back in Marvel's hands, sit back and go, okay, we're here. We're overlooking it. We're going to get the money, but you guys do what you do. Give the people the movie they want.
Exactly. You know, 'cause
at this point, it would be silly not to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you have to know that it would be better to let Marvel do it than try to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the main difference they had as far as Deadpool and Logan went was you had two actors who were ridiculously passionate about their characters.
Yeah.
Who pushed those two movies to be the way they are.
Yeah.
You don't hear people doing that for the Fantastic Four.
No.
I don't think it was necessarily that popular a set of characters, you know, as far as the comics go. But, you know, you don't hear anybody. If you ask, you know, 100 actors who their favorite superhero is, I would be shocked if a single one of them said Reed Richards.
Right.
Or the Human Torch or the Thing. Or
You might hear the Thing. You might hear the, I think Chick you might hear the enjoyed thing, but playing that role. But I think, yeah, you'd be hard-pressed to see anybody that was really like, oh, yeah, the Fantastic Four, they should bring that and bring that right.
Right. I don't think you would see anybody stepping up with the kind of passion that Ryan Reynolds had with Deadpool.
Yeah.
To go so far as to actually create, you know, a 5-minute, whatever it was, teaser, you know, to say, hey, this is what we want to do for the movie. Let's accidentally leak it out there to the fans so they can see it. You know what I mean? To actually have a suit designed and to write up a piece and actually have, you know, special effects set up and create it. That, you know, you could tell that was something that was so important to that guy that he had to get it done.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll ever see anything necessarily like that with the Fantastic Four.
No. Yeah.
So, you know, I think it'll at some point it'll come to them and they'll realize we need to do this. Hopefully it doesn't take them failing with another movie. But I think at some point it'll come to them where they go, yeah, we need to do what Sony did and get this done right finally.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right, well, let's dig right in it, man. Want to talk about Spider-Man Homecoming. First, we're going to do just a little, hey, look, you need to go see this or you don't need to go see this. So, you know, let's start things off with you, Professor, and then I'll chime in after you're done.
All right. I mean, I think I already said it. I would definitely say go see it.
Yeah.
You know, I think I think you've got at this point what could be considered the quintessential Spider-Man.
Exactly.
You know, we talked before and I said, you know, yeah, some of the Tobey Maguire movies were good. 1 and 2 were good. 3, not so much. But if you go back and watch them, you know, initially I kind of had things backwards, but you know, what I truly believed was McGuire was a good Peter Parker.
Yeah. Yeah.
He wasn't necessarily a good Spider-Man. He didn't have the right kind of jokes and the kind of quickness as far as quips and things like that would go, but he played the Peter Parker role pretty well.
Yeah.
Only problem there being he was like 45 when he was playing a high school student, or however old he was. He was definitely like in his 30s trying to play a high school kid. Yeah. Right? You know, and then, you know, you have Sam Raimi, who, while I love Sam Raimi, I don't know if his style is necessarily right for a superhero movie.
Yeah. It's kind of quirky.
Yeah, I mean, you put him behind the wheel of a horror movie, and you're going to get a fun, good movie, as we've seen, Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Ash versus Evil Dead, the TV show, all that stuff, that's what he's good at. You know, and he's one of those directors where you're watching Spider-Man, and you can go, this is definitely Sam Raimi. You can just tell by the things that happen.
Yeah.
But then, you know, part three came around, and the studio got involved, and wanted them to do things he didn't want to do, and then they put out a trash, you know, was essentially a trash movie at number three. Was it absolutely horrible? No. Not absolutely horrible, but it wasn't very good.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you fast forward and you've got Andrew Garfield, who is one of those guys who was pretty passionate about playing the character.
Right.
And he was a good Spider-Man. He had the right quips. He had the right feel to him. He was just not the best Peter Parker. A little too emo for some people. A little too handsome for some people, they thought. Which is kind of a silly statement, but I've heard that said a couple times.
Yeah.
But he wasn't the best Peter Parker. And the movies, unfortunately, while not unfun, were just not very well written when it came right down to it.
Right.
And just not very good. Yeah. But now you've got a kid who's great at both, in my opinion. He plays an incredible Peter Parker. You know, he's got the right amount of undercover cockiness with that weird, quirky 15-year-old high school kid, you know, who's easily embarrassed and easily, you know, out of place. And then you put him in the suit, and he's got a little bit of that arrogance, a little bit of that swag, you know, and he's got the quips down. He's good at the gags and whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, I think he is definitely the best. It's hands down, he's been the best Spider-Man that they've ever had. There's just no question about that.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, the movie, you know, like, again, we talked about offline, as long as you go in with the understanding of what the movie is, you're going to enjoy it 100 times more than you think.
Yeah.
You know, don't go into the movie thinking this is going to be your average, normal superhero movie. It's not going to be Captain America. It's not going to be Iron Man, even though they're both technically in the movie. I don't think that's really a spoiler, but whatever. Iron Man, for sure, is not a spoiler part. The other part kind of is, but not really. You know, you're going to get essentially a coming of age movie with a kid who, you know, look, he's 15 years old. He's in high school. He's going through all the stresses and all the stuff of growing up and getting older and hitting that point in your life when all the stuff starts to change. You start to, you know, you start to really pay more attention to girls and school starts to get a little more stressful because you're getting a little bit older, getting ready to, you know, move on to junior year where you get closer to the end of things, you know. And then add on top of that now he's got some of the most amazing powers, no pun intended, of any hero in the Marvel Universe. And he's 15.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, if you go in understanding that you're going to watch a kid who could potentially fall apart at any minute because of the entire world at this point is on his shoulders, and all he wants to do is prove that he can do it. He wants to prove that he can be a full-blown superhero, and he just, every turn, something happens that just throws things off course, you know, until he finally kind of manages to put two and two together. But, you know, it's funny at the same time. You know, there's not really much of a spoiler, but there's a scene where you find him running through a golf course because he's got nothing he can attach a web to try to move forward, you know.
Yeah.
And as he's running, the sprinklers in the golf course go up, and all you hear him say is, "This sucks," or something like that. But it's funny. It's got moments like that where, you know, if you did it as a more modern-day, more adult Spider-Man, he would think, okay, I shouldn't go through there because there's nowhere for me to attach, nowhere for me to go.
Right, right.
But as a kid, you know, he's just thinking, I got to get from A to B, and I'm going to go straight. You know, and then there's, you know, a scene in the movie where he's swinging from a building and he ends up falling on his face because he misjudges the distance and the length of his web. Just all the growing pain stuff you see him going through as not only a teenager, but as a brand new superhero still learning his power.
Right, right.
And if you go in with that thought behind it, it's a much more enjoyable movie because the expectations of seeing a kid as a full-blown superhero, you gotta throw those away. You gotta look at it as a kid who's legitimately at this point, I think if you watch the timelines as it comes up the movie, he's only had the powers for 8 months, something like that.
Yeah, it wasn't that long. Yeah,
I think in Civil War that he says he's only had the power for six months, and then then it says like 2 months later, after, basically saying it's 2 months after the events of Civil War is the movie itself. So, not everything is developed as the way it should be in his mind, and even maybe some of his powers may not necessarily be developed quite just yet. He might not even know they exist.
Yeah.
So if you go in with that thought, and it really is a John Hughes type feel of a movie. It's for me, it was the perfect blend of a superhero movie with a John Hughes movie, which when I first heard them say that, I was like, I don't know how that's going to work. It works. It works really, really well. Yeah. Not only do you have this young kid who's a great actor at this point, as far as I'm concerned, for this kind of role, but you put him up with Robert Downey Jr., who, everybody who has seen any Avengers movie knows that he is also the quintessential Tony Stark.
Right.
And he's great in the movie, and he's just a presence, or lack of a presence, depending on the one scene, who Peter's trying to live up to. He's trying to live up to be, he wants to be basically Tony Stark at that level, and then you top that with Michael Keaton, who could possibly be the best Marvel villain they've done yet.
Yeah.
He is that good in this movie.
Yeah.
When we get more into the spoilers, I'll talk about my favorite scene throughout the entire movie, but there is to not give too much away, there is a scene between the two of them that lasts a good 5 minutes or so. Gold. That is so well acted. It's just so gold. Well written. It is exactly. It is pure gold.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that superhero movies don't get Oscar looks. And I know that's a strong thing to say, but if you look at the movie and you look at what the scene's all about, it's so well acted by the two of them that it really would be something that should deserve some kind of look.
Yeah.
In that sense, because it's so well done.
Because I mean, Keaton's already sealed that Oscar nom for Birdman, right?
Right, I think so. Yeah.
So I mean, you got that quality of talent. I mean, that scene was gripping. That whole scene,
yes.
Like it was just. We'll get into it later, but it was incredible.
It was fantastic. It's fantastic. It's a good movie all around. Look, is it a great, great movie? I don't know if I can say that necessarily. but I do think it's a really, really good movie. Like if I'm looking at my, top 10 Marvel movies, look, for me personally, it doesn't beat Civil War.
Yeah.
It doesn't beat Winter Soldier, and it doesn't beat Guardians 1.
Yeah.
It definitely beats the Thor movies. It definitely beats, I think, Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm.
I think it definitely beats the Avengers movies. Maybe closer to the first one, but definitely beats the second one. Does it beat Doctor Strange? I'm not sure, because I loved Doctor Strange.
Right, right.
But it's definitely, for me, it's at least in the top 10, if not in the top 5,
right,
as far as the Marvel movies go. I really, really enjoyed it. I'm going to look to go see it a third time. I've already seen it twice. I'm going to go look to see it a third time.
Yeah, man, definitely. Yeah, I'm definitely in the same boat. I mean, you look at all the iterations of Spider-Man that we've gotten so far. And like you said, I definitely agree. Tobey Maguire was a great Peter Parker. If you want to talk like Golden Age comics, like the first comics of Spider-Man that was coming out, the Peter Parker that we got in those issues, like Tobey Maguire embodied those perfectly. You know what I'm saying? But his Spider-Man was weak, and like the story of that arc was it kind of went down after the first for me. Because I think the first was the best. But as you got more into that trilogy, it just got worse and worse. They piled stuff on, and then you could definitely see that Raimi's hands were being tied at that point, and he was being asked to throw a lot of stuff in there that really shouldn't have been in there. So, and then there's the whole emo Peter Parker scene.
Oh, God.
Just really awkward.
don't even want to remember that.
Yeah, like, and everybody knows that scene, and that there's so many memes created from that scene. It's just like, it was awful. And then you got Andrew Garfield, who was really passionate about playing Spider-Man, which was the most enjoyable to see. And him bring Spider-Man to the screen, not Peter Parker, because his Peter Parker, his Peter Parker was lacking in the fact that, you know, we really didn't get to see Pete as we would have liked to see him, in that kind of like that outcast nerd kind of feel. He was an outcast of types, but it just wasn't what I was looking for personally as Peter Parker. But his Spider-Man was spot on. I'll say this, you know, without any problem to anybody, but I feel like Spider-Man is pretty much Deadpool Jr. or Deadpool for kids. That's how I've always felt that Spider-Man is. He always has this kind of like snarky, you know, aside, like he doesn't break the fourth wall, but he's close to it. But if you watch some of the incarnations that they have of him today, like even the animated cartoons for Spider-Man, like he breaks the fourth wall all the time, and it's perfect. It's perfect for Spider-Man in that realm. You know what I'm saying? But I just don't think his Peter Parker was that well done. Right. And number two is just too congested. It gets that there's always that fear that, you know, studios are going to do too much with the follow up. And that's what I got with The Amazing Spider-Man 2. There was too much going on, and I wasn't able to really enjoy the characters like I did for the first Amazing Spider-Man. I think that was my favorite part of the Amazing Spider-Man movie, the one with the last one right before Tom Holland.
Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just forgot his name. Andrew Garfield. Yeah. So the ones with Andrew Garfield, it's like the what I really loved about the first one, it was more of a character exploration. So you really got to see everybody fully thought out. You got to see Uncle Ben, Aunt May, Peter Parker. You got down to the Lizard, his story, like how involved these characters are. Gwen Stacy, her family. You know, you get to see these people on the street level type of character development, and then it's just like kind of threw it out the window with the second one. With Tom Holland's version, he thoroughly captures everything that I envisioned for Spider-Man. And like, what I really liked about this movie is that they were pretty much upfront, like, hey, we're heavily influenced by John Hughes. This is going to be a teen movie. This is going to be a coming of age movie. And I'm all about that. I love that stuff. So it's like, sure, Breakfast Club, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Like those types of stories, I love them, because it's just like, you know, you get to see the cliques. You get to see who's the winners, who's the losers in the high school, you know, environment. And it's just, you get to see how much of a zoo it is, and how these kids are just trying to, you know, be better versions of themselves by the end of the day. You know, and right, that's how Spider-Man felt. It's like you watch this character grow. You watch him go through all the growing pains of being a young kid, going through like it possibly going through puberty and going through this power change in his own body. So that comes with his own downsides. And you just watch him kind of like lunk around and trip over himself. But the tenacity, you get to see that aspect of the hero story, which I always love. And like, Spider-Man's the people's champ, so I've always loved that about him. He's the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. He's the guy on the street making sure that old ladies can cross the street without worrying, like make sure no bikes get stolen, you know, like that type of stuff. Yep. I love that aspect of Spider-Man. And so the fact that we got to see that in this film, and just the telling of this story in a modern day setting, just the modern New York dynamic, I just thought was perfect. So, yeah, I would definitely tell anybody who asked me, go see it. I went to go see it in AMC's Prime 3D seats. And I gotta say, it wasn't worth a Prime 3D ticket, though. Like, I don't need to see it in 3D. I don't need to see it in the Prime seating. The Prime seating was uncomfortable. I didn't really get to enjoy the movie like I know I wanted to. Right. So, I mean, you know, definitely go see this movie. Prime 3D was fun in the fact that there are scenes that make you jump, like literally scared the crap out of me. some of the scenes that Vulture came in on, like, I was like, whoa. It's like, you can imagine, like, your seat shaking at the same time that he's coming on the scene. Like, yeah.
Right.
But it's not, I don't think I would pay for another one of those tickets again. I would definitely see this, though, and I'm going to see it multiple times, but yeah, that's pretty much where I would consider it as far as that's concerned.
That's fair. I mean, I'm a 3D guy. I think most people who know me know what my viewing is. They know I'm a 3D guy. Like, I just enjoy watching movies in 3D. I know a lot of people don't. They get some headaches. They just don't see it.
Right, right.
I like the depth and the feel 3D gives to you.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think this movie needed 3D.
Nah, yeah.
While I did think it adds certain things like cityscapes and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it adds too much as far as like the fight scenes and things like that go. So if you want, you know, if you're going to go check it out in a regular theater, you should be just fine.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to lose anything as far as the experience go. Me, I'm an IMAX snob. I got to go see it. Everything I want to see in IMAX. 99% of the time these days, it's all IMAX 3D. So, you know, that's what I'm all about.
Yeah.
So I'll see it that way every time I go see it just because that's just me. But I don't think it necessarily needs to be one. But I do think it's one of those that probably isn't a bad idea to go see it in the theater. Because some of the scenes that, you know, we'll start talking about maybe in some of the spoilers here will, you know, come off a little bit better, I think, on the bigger screen than they would on the smaller screen.
Right, right.
And one of the things that I think, you know, you were talking about, you know, Parker, Garfield, you know, as a high school student, one of the things I found was pretty interesting was there's a couple people who I've talked to about the movie so far who took their teenage kids to go see it,
mm-hmm.
who said, in both cases, they said the kids looked at them after the movie and said they nailed the high school aspect to a T.
Yeah.
How it is these days.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something you never really heard for the first two movies.
Yeah.
You know, like Spider-Man 1 and 2, you know, it's kind of high school, maybe more like when I was back in high school, you know, a billion years ago at this point. But it never really kind of felt like a real high school.
Exactly.
You know, the way it is.
Yeah, it was kind of off. It was kind of at arm's length. But I feel the, because that was the one aspect of Peter Parker that I was like, I got it, but it was like, it wasn't the Peter Parker that I was familiar with. But it's definitely like the social outcast type feel that they gave to Peter Parker in Amazing Spider-Man. I think, yeah, I knew a lot of people were going to say they nailed that aspect.
And in this one, they finally show you that he's a sciencey kid, that he's a bright kid.
Yeah.
You know, in the previous movies, they kind of hint around that maybe he's really smart as far as some of his studies and stuff go, but they never really delve into the fact that he loves science and that he's really, really like a super bright kid.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at some of the old comics and look at some of the, you know, the heroes that they will always say are the most intelligent heroes in the universe, they don't really say it too often, but when it comes up, they tell you that Parker is one of the smartest guys in the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
You know, he's no Reed Richards. He's no Tony Stark. He's no, you know, Hank Pym. But every time something like that comes up, they always say how much he surprises them.
Yep.
In what he knows and how bright he really is.
Yeah, he's always in that conversation.
And they finally delve into that a lot in this movie, which is really cool to see.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that's what I definitely enjoyed about it. Because I'm thinking even, and we'll probably dig more into this in a minute, but like Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man, it's like I was so glad that they brought the web shooters back.
Yeah,
because taking the web shooters away in the first Spider-Man, although it was understandable, it stripped an aspect of Peter Parker that we never really got to explore. And they didn't really explore it again until they brought Doc Ock in 3. Or was that 2? That was 2.
You talking about Doc Ock?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was 2.
That was two. Yeah, when they brought him back, when they brought him in and then we watched Peter interact with him, then we got to see that aspect. But we had no idea, like, this was the mind that Peter had in the first one. So it was nice to see them bring that back. But it was even better in Spider-Man Homecoming because the web shooters were Peter's idea from start to finish, which they really didn't nail in Amazing Spider-Man. Cause it was like Andrew Garfield's character took the web cartridges and then tried to make something of them, which is, you know, genius in and of itself, that reverse engineering, breaking things apart, putting them back together. But like sure. The whole conception of that, I think, is just, it's those little things that really carry a character to a next level of respect that you can have for them. And I think they did that in Homecoming.
Yep, I would agree with that 100%.
Yeah. So, you know, our verdicts are in. Go see this movie. Go see it once. Go see it twice. Go see it three times in the theater. It's great.
Yep, so, absolutely.
You know, go in there, bring your family, and enjoy it. So this is the time where we're about to go dive into the aspects of this film. Like, we're about to discuss some detail. So here is your spoilers warning. If you do not stop this podcast now, you will regret not listening to me.
That's when right.
I told you that there's spoilers ahead. So
beyond this, it's not our fault.
It is not our fault. We abscond all kinds of blame or hate that will be thrown at us because we're doing this. So
that's right.
You have been fairly warned. One more time. Spoilers ahead.
Spoilers incoming. Don't want to know what happens? Turn it off now.
All right. So let's go ahead and dive in. So when the movie opens, we get like, I mean, it literally starts it starts right after Avengers 1.
Right. Yeah.
So you get to see the Vulture, Adrian Toomes. You get to see Michael Keaton and his group. They're working as like, what are they? There's like a salvage team.
They're basically a salvage team. Yeah. And they've got a city contract that they signed to salvage all of the Chitauri crap that's, you know, all over the city.
Yeah.
You know, and they're in particular, they're working in, I think it's the train station where Hulk and Thor bring down the one large like worm looking thing in the first one, like Hulk punches Thor.
Yeah.
That little comedy quick beat Avengers. I think that's where they're working specifically.
Yeah.
Not that makes a difference. It's just kind of nice. It's kind of cool to see that throwback.
Yeah.
You know, to the Avengers. So it's a familiar scene as to where they are.
Yeah. And this is just like Marvel's like great way of saying, hey, this all takes place in this universe that we've built over the course of, you know, 18 plus films going to 22 in this phase. And it is just nice to know that, hey, we have this whole world and this exists in a world that we've already established.
Right.
So he's sitting. So they're all sitting there and they're doing all this. I thought it was interesting, though, that the group that comes in is Damage Control. And I know that they're big in the comics. They're the guys that clean up all the mess that the Avengers and heroes make as they're taking down these bad guys. Now, I'm not sure if I heard this right, but weren't they saying that they were going to be doing something with Damage Control? I thought we were going to get like a TV series or something.
I thought I remember reading at one point there was going to be a Damage Control TV series, but I don't think it panned out. I could be wrong. They could still be working on it.
Yeah.
But they were looking at a Damage Control TV series at one point.
Okay.
But again, I don't know the story. I know there was a Damage Control comic at one point back in the day. It's not something I ever read.
Yeah.
I don't know how long of a run it was or anything. I don't know how popular it was, but it is, you know, it's a familiar, if you're familiar with old school Marvel or even with some of the newer stuff that they hint around, you kind of know who Damage Control is. It's more of a government type group, you know, that's meant to come in and do all this cleanup and salvage all the alien tech and whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, it's to keep it out of normal people's hands, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
that's where we find ourselves at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's a nice little nod. I would definitely like for them to see, I would like to see them do something with that. So I hope that we eventually get some kind of TV show down the line. I know that DC's planning a show like that, and that's supposed to be coming on, I think, this fall. Can't remember what the name is, but it's going to be like a sitcom type Office type deal. So it
wasn't that Powerless? Was that the name?
Yeah,
of the show?
That's what it's called. It's Powerless. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean they already actually ran that. It got canceled, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
Only made, I think, one season. Yeah, I wanted to watch it, and I forgot all about it.
Yeah.
Mostly was going to watch it because Alan Tudyk was in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, Firefly fans, I'm a big fan of Alan Tudyk's, you know, his Con Man series is hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's come and gone already, unfortunately.
Oh, wow, that sucks.
Yeah. I never watched an episode, but I know it's already gone.
Yeah. I mean, look, I like the fact that they had Alan Tudyk in there. I feel like they needed to fill out their cast with other people, though. I think having Vanessa, I think they had Vanessa Hudgens headline that show.
That's the one. Yeah. I was just going to say. It was another big name, but not exactly one known for her acting.
Right.
As I recall. Yeah.
So, it didn't
make it too far. But yeah, I don't know the story on the Damage Control TV show, whether that's still a go or whether that's off the books these days, too.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like as the movie continues, you get to see like from Spider-Man's perspective, everything that kind of happened in Civil War, which I thought was great. Like, it's just you watching this kid like freak out, like he's fanboying like everybody else.
Doing exactly what you would expect.
Yeah.
Just to back it up for one quick sec, though, what I really loved about that opening scene in the movie is The one thing about Spider-Man Homecoming is there is no origin story for Parker.
Right.
They skipped over the whole origin story because, A, we've already seen it twice.
Yeah.
And, B, we've already seen the character in another movie. So going back and doing an origin story now wouldn't make sense.
Right.
They throw an homage to it later when he and Ned are walking around the city and Ned is drilling him with questions about the spider biting him. Does he think the spider could bite me? Would it hurt? Did it really hurt when you got bit? You know, until Peter gets annoyed and says, Spider's dead, Ned, and just cuts the conversation off at that point. But that's a 2-minute scene, and it's the entire origin story told to you in just a little throwaway conversation.
Right.
But the movie starts with essentially an origin story for the Vulture character.
Right.
Who's never really referred to as the Vulture until the end of the movie. Yeah. But if you know the comics and you know the character, you know that's who it is. It's who Adrian Toomes becomes. But the beginning is an origin story for the Vulture, and I think that is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because you don't always get a lot of backstory as far as the main villains are concerned.
Yeah.
In a lot of some movies you do, but you don't get this kind of – the kind of backstory that they give him. Because with this character, the backstory they give you, the way they set it up, you actually end up feeling bad for the villain in the movie.
Yep. It humanizes because basically, him, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. He's all excited. He's got this crew. He spent this money to buy these trucks to salvage all of this. And in comes Damage Control and says, you guys are out. And, you know, he says, but I spent this money. I could lose my house. I could lose my family. And, you know, the Damage Control director or main person played by Tyne Daly turns around and goes, sorry, nothing I can do.
Yeah.
You know, basically telling him, you know, I don't care. You know, you're going to lose all this money because we're taking over.
Right.
You know, and, Just you see his whole world crumble in a span of 2 seconds, you know, because they've taken this all away from him. And I think it just helped make him an even better character in the movie because you definitely really do become sympathetic towards his cause.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like cut and dry. Like you definitely don't. And one thing I liked about this character that they haven't done in not just Marvel films, but in superhero films as a whole, he's not a throwaway villain. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So by the end of the film, you don't feel like, oh man, this is going to be the last time we see him. He got completely owned in some like fluke or lucky moment. It's just, nah, the situation turned, but we could very, very well see Vulture again. We could see him.
Oh
again.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And he's not doing what he's doing to take over the world, you know, Pinky and the Brain.
Right.
He's doing what he's doing to keep his family going.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a bad guy just for the sake of being a bad guy. He's a bad guy because it's profitable and it's keeping his family in the lifestyle that he wants to keep them in.
Yep.
And that's a completely different bottom line than you see in most of these movies. So right. I loved that aspect. And it really kicks it off at the very beginning as to how that's going to be.
Yeah. Makes me think
but
about
then, yeah,
that.
Like you said.
It makes me think about that. What is it? That Killing Joke quote that Joker's character gives. It's like, oh, you're just one bad day from being me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, like anybody could find themselves in that situation. All that has to change is the circumstances.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
But then, like you said, the next goes into that montage that you would absolutely see any 15-year-old kid who's got superpowers go through. You know, they show him it's first time he's getting on a private plane and he's annoying the hell out of Happy Hogan. You know, and then he's in Germany and he's going, I don't know why I'm here, but this is really cool. Blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, he's losing his mind and
freaking out.
freaking out. And then, you know, all of a sudden you see the battlefield essentially and it's Iron Man and Cap and you know, and he's off to the side with his phone going, this is amazing. Mr. Stark has Cap and whoa, who's the new guy? He's losing his mind, he's getting all into it. You know, and then you hear the yell from Civil War. Underoos, you know, and the whole thing starts. It's an amazing quick little scene with him. It's just exactly how you would expect the kid to be.
Yep.
Who's, you know, a superhero for the first time, you know, going in to fight all these other superheroes.
Yeah. Cause when we watched Civil War, we was like, oh man, Spider-Man came into the scene so cool. Like he just swung in there, took Cap shield, like, but we didn't even know all of this was going on in the background.
Nope. It's all that little extra stuff. And then he stops in the middle again to do more video. I saw Captain America and I stole his shield and I threw it at him and blah, blah, blah. Whoa, he's big. I gotta go. And he drops the phone and he moves on. Just an amazing, amazing quick clip. Just to show you that he really is just a kid.
Yeah.
When it all comes right down to it.
Yeah, those are some, you know, really good scenes, man.
And it just, like, that's one thing, not to veer too far off the rest of what we're talking about, but the one thing I do love about the movie is that, you know, every other hero we see mm-hmm. is an adult when they become the hero.
Right.
You know, Cap is in his, you know, probably early to mid-20s when he gets the potion and he becomes Captain America.
Right.
Stark, while being a genius his entire life, doesn't become Iron Man until he's a grown man, probably, I guess, in his late 20s, early 30s, something like that. Yeah.
And, you know, all of these characters, grown man is debatable for Tony
Stark.
Well,
all right, fair enough. But he's an adult of sorts. He's an adult in age. You know, when he becomes Iron Man, you know, Ant-Man, same thing. You know, Black Widow. Black Widow's the only one who was probably a kid when she became the hero, but you don't see her until she's an adult.
Right.
You know, same thing probably with Black Panther. Black Panther was already kind of leaning towards being the hero as a kid. But he doesn't become the Black Panther until he's an adult.
Yeah.
This is the first time you've seen a teenage kid who is now has the weight of being a superhero on top of him. And it just, he plays it so well throughout the whole movie. I can't say enough about Tom Holland and how good he was in this movie.
Yeah, he
Sorry,
was great.
Quick side note. I'll turn it back to you as far as the continuing with the movie after the Civil War.
So we got the scenes about Civil War and then it kind of just like jumps into the now. And we just, We watch as Peter's just like hanging on, just waiting for that call. Put me in the game, coach.
It's so depressing. It's just so depressing. You feel so bad for him.
Yeah. But he carries it though. He carries it with like a little bit of dignity, just waiting for this call that's never going to come.
Just that utter hope that you can feel that he's got, that refusal to give up. They show you, if you're a Sherlock fan at all, if you watch the show Sherlock, you see the scenes where Sherlock's texting back and forth with people, and they show the text messages like pop-up bubbles on the screen, and it pops down so you can see what he's typing. And they do this in Homecoming. He's on the subway going to school, you know, and he's texting Happy Hogan, and it's, you know, hey Happy, I'm in school till 2:45, just waiting for my next mission. It's Peter Parker, by the way, you know, and then they quick show him scroll back. And it's just pages upon pages of one-sided text that never get an answer.
Yeah.
So you just know that the kid is dying inside because he just wants to go be a superhero, but he's not giving it to him. It's just a great little quick scene to show you that. It's amazing.
Yeah. Oh man, that's definitely a nice little montage because that's the scene that you were talking about earlier where he's like swinging and he falls like flat on his face.
As soon as he gets out of school.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the next scene right after that is they show him in class and he's checking the clock every 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And he's checking his phone and he's getting all nervous and he's tapping on the table and he's watching his own videos on YouTube of himself catching the car. And he's just waiting because he knows that when he gets out at 2:45, he can go be Spider-Man. He can go patrol the city and he knows that at some point if he calls Happy, Happy's going to call him back for a mission, and it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just such a great display of just this, you know, hopeless optimism, I guess, maybe the way to put it. You know, like he in his heart, he knows it's going to happen. He knows he's going to be called for a new mission, and it just never happened.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just such a letdown for him, and you feel it when it happens. It's such an amazing scene.
Yeah, it's the best, because it's like that starry-eyed dreamer that you get from those teen movies. Like, that's definitely what we get in those scenes. Like, he's hanging on. You know, still pushing through. He knows, like, oh, once I get to summer, it's going to be great. You know, once I get to the Avengers, it's going to be great. That's all he's thinking. So it's great to see those scenes. It's great to see him because not only does it, like, just give you a feeling like he's, like, the youngest Avenger, but it gives you the feeling that, you know, like, he's really just, at the end of the day, he's just a guy from Queens trying to be something.
Yep. You know, I mean, you see him put on the suit for the first time, and he's got this air of power about him. He's all confident. You know, the suit fits him to a T, and he's jumping all over the place, and he's perfect. And the following scenes, all he manages to do is stop a guy from stealing a bike, help a lady with directions, you know, try to stop some guy from stealing a car that turned out to actually be that guy's car, and in turn pissing off the entire neighborhood around him.
That scene.
Car alarm. Was hilarious.
It was hilarious. I mean, if any one scene I feel like truly embodies like New York life, that was definitely it.
100%. Guy's got a Slim Jim, try to open his car. Spidey pulls down, webs his head, slams his head up the car, tells him he's not right to be stealing cars. Webs the poor guy's hand in the car, and the guy's like, oh, it's my car. I'm trying to get into it. And he's like, oh. Sorry, and then the car alarm sets off, and all the windows around the apartment start opening up. The one guy's yelling at him, I work the night shift, turn the damn car alarm off. The old lady's yelling at him, turn the alarm off. Stan Lee's appearance happens right there. He leans out the window. It's just such a comedy of errors in that scene.
Yeah.
You know, and then, like you said before, you know, he falls on his face when he's swinging from the one rooftop because he just doesn't judge it right.
Yeah.
All the little itty-bitty mistakes that go through. You know, when he first puts the suit on, he takes his backpack and he webs it to a trash can, comes back later and it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, like, you didn't think that he put it somewhere else where it might not disappear somewhere. It's just all the little stuff that, you know, all the little stuff he goes through that just messes with him completely.
Yeah.
It's just such a great, great little montage to go through.
Yeah.
You know, to really show you that it's just all fun. It's just, none of it's perfect.
Yeah. And the scenes, like, I want to go into more about like the characters that we meet. And then like we got this, then we have like all the high school scenes. Like, we get to see Peter in his element, like Peter the genius, which I feel like we haven't really gotten in the past two films, but we get him in this film.
Right. I definitely agree. Now, some of that is some of the nitpicky stuff I didn't like about the movie, only because, okay, so in the one scene he's in what you assume is like a chemistry class.
Right.
Because he's got safety goggles on, he's paying attention. But then he pulls a drawer out inside of his desk and he's mixing a web fluid, a new, you know, web fluid version 2, which is awesome. You want to see him doing that stuff. But at the same time, it's like, who's not going to see him doing that? Somebody's going to turn and go, what are you doing? You know, and ask him why he's creating this web fluid out of nowhere. You know, it's pretty obvious.
Because
he pulls something out and a huge web strand comes up with it. Nobody's going to ask him what he's doing and why he's hiding a full-blown experiment in a drawer under a desk. You know, at no point the teacher's ever going to think, or somebody in the next class for that is going to open that drawer and see that he's got all this crap in there.
I know, yeah.
You know, so some of that stuff bugged me, you know, but I loved seeing it because I loved seeing him get more into the whole sciencey part of it. Like, you know, later on in the movie when he's got the piece of alien tech and he's trying to take it apart, trying to figure out what it is. I love the scene because he's doing that, but then it bugs me because I'm thinking he's in the back of a wide open shop and he's got this big purple glowing ball. He's hitting it with a hammer. Nobody else in the room is going to go, hey, what's that?
I think, that was the most hilarious part because, like, the teacher didn't even care. Like, he wasn't even there. He was there, but he was just, like, reading something else, and he was just like...
Yeah, he wasn't paying attention. The noise goes off, and he just says, keep your hands away from the instruments or blades or whatever. And that's fine, but it's high school. There's going to be a nosy kid in there somewhere going, hey, what are you messing with, Parker? You know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff. So while I loved seeing him get into that stuff, I would have preferred them do it almost in like a sneaky fashion.
Yeah.
You know, like have him being the only one in the room or something while he's doing that, whether it's, you know, in an off period or after school or something, I think would have made a little more sense. But it's still enjoyable to see him actually get into the sciencey stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Because I'm like looking at those scenes and I'm just like, you know, it just it's a testament to, one, how invisible Peter Parker really is in everyday life.
You know what? That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. That's a great point. You know, in the comics, he is basically invisible in high school. He's not getting his ass kicked or being bullied. He is basically an invisible kid. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that one.
Yeah. So it's like you look at those scenes and it's just like, yo, how is he getting away with this stuff? Like nobody even notices that he's there. Like he's,
right.
And then like even when he's sitting there with Ned, like they're sitting at a desk basically ogling this girl, just like, hey, does Liz have a new dress on? And they're just sitting there.
No, we've seen that before.
Yo, it's so hilarious. Like I love it. I love the dynamic of just how that high school is. Like even though the school is full of geniuses, it's just like it still embodies like all of those little cliques and, you know, all the times that people feel invisible in school, like it, all that's still captured even there, you know.
It's just done so, even down to the two kids who are doing the daily newscasts on school television, who couldn't be more awkward if they wanted to. It's just so bad at what they're doing, but yet so perfect as far as the movie goes. You know, and they throw in the little, you know, Betty Brant is a big character as far as Spider-Man lore goes. I want to say she was one of his, if not his first girlfriend.
Yeah, I think she was.
Might have been
the second
Betty, somewhere in there. You know, she's mixed in there somewhere with Gwen and with MJ, who's a whole other story that I'll get into later. But she's mixed in there somewhere, so it's kind of cool to see that character is in there now.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, that
supposedly
was cool.
The other guy is somebody too, but I don't know who. I Kevin Smith and Mark Bernardin were talking about it on their Fat Man on Batman podcast. That kid is somebody, but I don't remember who it is. I think he's part of Flash's crew or something in the comics, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
But even down to that, you know, the homecoming's coming and everybody's going to need to have somebody. Flash is the other kid. I don't have a date. Do you want to go with me? Flash is back to her. No. You know, just. It's so like, awkward. You can tell they're reading something. It's just so perfect.
Right, right.
It's so like, well done with that stuff.
I remember many a radio show at my high school that I had to listen to awkward people just kind of going through the events. Yes.
just that cringeworthy moment of, you know, you see your friends on TV and they're trying to do something and it's just failing miserably.
Yeah.
And you could just feel it. It's so perfect the way they did it in the movie that way. But the high school aspect, the quote unquote John Hughes aspect of the movie really was done really, really well.
Yeah. Oh man. So let's talk about some of these characters, man. Let's go down a list, see who are your favorites and who weren't your favorites.
Boy, that's not going to be too hard to get into.
Yeah, yeah.
So, obviously, I think I've spoken enough about Tom Holland.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Again, amazing. Even though his first back to Spider-Man is kind of ironic, but just fantastic movie. You couldn't have picked somebody better. Same thing for me with Michael Keaton. Amazing in the role that he performs. Just fantastic. And then you start digging into some of the lesser characters. So, you know, you look at Keaton's crew with the Tinkerer, who I didn't know a whole lot about as far as the comics was concerned, but that guy was good. Like he was that kind of geeky, you know, mom basement looking guy that you would expect to be in that role. And he was really good.
Yeah.
Even though he's not really in the movie all that much.
Right.
You know, he really pulled that part off very, very well.
Yeah.
You have, was it Bokeem? I don't know what his last name is.
Yeah. Bokeem Woodbine. He was,
yes. He played the second Shocker.
Yeah, Herman Schultz.
Herman Schultz. He was very good, I thought. Even though, again, he's not in the movie all that much, but he played it. You know, that's another one of those characters that they kind of changed the diversity of, which is fine. but he kind of played the character kind of more like you would in the comics, you know, kind of a more subdued kind of trying to be more careful than, you know, because so in the movie, there's two versions of the Shocker. There's the one guy who's like, doesn't give a damn what happens.
Yeah.
Doesn't Jackson look Bryce. At anybody. Yeah. Thinks he knows everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we already said, the spoilers, he ends up getting killed in actually a pretty humorous scene. You know,
the
Adrian Toomes character.
That was the anti-grav gun.
Well, but even before that, he leads back desk, goes, that work? Tinker goes, I don't know. He picks up this huge laser rifle and basically disintegrates the guy with it. He turns back around and goes, I thought that was the anti-gravity gun. Tinker goes, oh, that's the one over there. And that's just, it's a humor scene where he literally just melted another human being from existence. But it's funny the way it's done. Like, right. it's kind of slapsticky.
Yeah.
You know, and then they create a new Shocker with Bokeem. He becomes the new Shocker. And he was good.
Yeah, Bokeem was definitely good. I liked seeing Bokeem him.
Good.
Because he was calculated. He was what I expected Shocker to be, you know?
Yes.
So I'm definitely looking forward. If they bring him back, I would not mind that at all.
I can see them expanding on that character for sure. Yeah. For sure. I like Marissa Tomei as Aunt May. It's an interesting option to make her younger.
Yeah.
But I thought she was very good. I thought she was definitely that, you know, the aunt character that you kind of expect him to have. Even again, she's not in the movie all that much, but I thought she was pretty good.
Yeah, she has some good moments. She has some good moments because I think I love the way that they play on the fact that she's the hot Aunt May.
You know what
I'm saying? So they're sitting in the restaurant, and you know it should be Peter's favorite place, and they're sitting there talking, and then the waiter comes over and says, "Oh, this is on the house."
Yeah, rice pudding or something. And he winks at her. I didn't notice the second time I saw her, the waiter winks at her real quick, and she still doesn't quite put two and two together. You know, Peter's like, I think he larbs you. Like, oh.
Yeah.
They kick that off from the beginning of the movie when he's making the video diary with Stark. And Stark's like, oh, we got to make a cover video for your aunt. Okay, you ready? You ready? Hey, May, what's wearing? Hope you're wearing something skimpy. Ha, ha, ha. You're like, wait, come on, dude. You're sitting with a 15-year-old nephew in the car. You're trying to hit on his aunt. You know. So I liked this little bit of a different play on May as far as, you know, making the character much younger and,
right.
and, you know, kind of sexy aunt. So I liked that.
Yeah.
Who else we got?
Got Ned. Let's talk about Ned.
Love Ned.
Ned was awesome.
A little over the top in some scenes. Maybe used a little too much in some other scenes. But the kid is good. You know, he's really, really good.
Yeah.
Again, another character that they kind of changed from the comics. You know, the original Ned Leeds in the comics is an older white guy who goes on to become the Hobgoblin.
Uh-huh.
You know, in the movie, changed him to more of the ganky character from the Ultimate Spider-Man with the Miles Morales. So I was kind of surprised they didn't go that route.
Yeah.
To just call him ganky and call it from there. Surprised they went with Ned Leeds. I was okay with it because I don't imagine you're ever going to see the Hobgoblin as a character in the movies anyway.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of more of a B-lister, maybe C-lister Spider-Man villain. I mean, people are probably going to argue with me over that, but while it was a big name in some of the comics, it was also like seven different people, you know, as the years went on.
And I think, point, Wade Wilson was Hobgoblin at one point, right?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. He might have been.
Yeah.
But I mean, the original Ned Leeds, the original Hobgoblin, ends up getting killed not too much longer, I think, after he was introduced.
Yeah.
You know, he's in, I think, I don't remember the exact story, but I want to say he and Peter are in, like, Japan or China or something, and he finds Ned with his throat cut in his, you know, in his hotel room.
Sheesh.
So, yeah, it's kind of a rough one. But, you know that kid is never going to become the Hobgoblin, so I'm okay with him being Ned Leeds and being Peter's friend.
Yeah.
Because it also kind of pushes a little farther away from doing the Osborns all over again.
Right.
Do I think the Osborns are going to pop up? I do. You know, our friend, JR, one of our friends, actually brought up kind of a good point that I hadn't thought of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the movie for, you know, obviously those who haven't seen yet with spoilers, Stark Tower has been sold. It's being emptied out. All the stuff is being moved.
Right.
He thinks that potentially that could become Oscorp.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So I could see maybe at the end of Homecoming 2 or maybe halfway through Homecoming 2, you see the Oscorp logo across that building.
Yeah.
But I think staying away from the Harry Osborn just yet and the Norman Osborn makes a lot of sense because you've already done it twice.
Yeah.
Second time, not really all that successful. First time was okay, except for the costume.
Yeah.
But, you know, and Harry in part three is awful. But, you know, staying away from that for now, I think, is the smart thing. Because the other thing you have to look at is if you introduce Osborn, you kind of have to introduce Gwen Stacy. And you really don't want to get into the whole death of Gwen Stacy thing all over again just yet. You know, if they extend beyond the Homecoming 2, which I can't imagine they won't, maybe you start leaning towards that stuff then, but not now.
Yeah, because I mean, the way that the reports are going, they're kind of making Spider-Man the focal point of the next phase of Marvel after Infinity War 2. So I'm definitely seeing, like, he's going to be the Iron Man character of that next phase. He's going to be the focal tentpole of that. So we'll see.
And I love the scene where you see him sit up and Ned's wearing the mask and it's stretched out on his huge head and it just looks funny. Even the eyes are moving for him as he's looking.
Yeah.
It's a great scene. It's a great character for the movie.
Yeah.
It really is a good foil to go along with Peter throughout the entire film.
Oh man, before we even go on to more of the characters, let's talk about the mask. Well, yeah, let's talk about the mask, because I love the fact that they give it that kind of character. We didn't really get that character before, but like you've seen it in the comics all the time. And then like even with the latest incarnation of animated Spider-Man, his eyes on his mask are animated all the time. Like they're always doing something. Either he's like flat, he's like deadpanning, or you know, he's looking shocked at something, but those eyes are animated. I think that like is just an awesome aspect to the costume.
And that's how it always was in the comics. You know, the eyes always were the way of his, you know, showing some kind of emotion or some kind of expression, because you can't see his face. You know, the mask is always there. So the fact that they were able to do that with the eyes, you know, really added a whole new dimension to the character. And for once, he spends more time in the mask than outside of the mask, whereas in the previous movies, one of my biggest complaints was it always felt like he spent more time out of the mask than he spent in it.
Yeah.
You know, like, it seemed like everywhere Maguire and Garfield would go, he would pull the mask off to look at everything. Doesn't seem to really happen that way, you know, in this one. Like, the whole scene at the very end where he's trapped in the
warehouse.
Damage control warehouse.
Yeah.
The mask never comes off once.
Yeah.
Not once. He's wearing it the whole time. Now, granted, it's mostly because he's talking to what he calls Karen in the voice in his new suit.
Yeah.
But it's still a great excuse for him to leave the mask on, because I feel like had it been the previous movies, the mask would have been off as he's trying to find a way to get out of the warehouse and wouldn't have been wearing it. So, you know, it's Spider-Man. He's at least 90% of the time. And I felt like, The way the eyes, the expressiveness of the eyes is so great, the way they do it. And their explanation of, you know, it helps them focus is great. That's just a great way for them to legitimize being able to do that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So yeah, I agree. I love the mask. For the most part, I love the whole costume. I guess you call it costume.
Yeah.
I would prefer it wasn't quite so Tony Stark, you know, with 500 and whatever different iterations of webs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or maybe not, you know, maybe not the little drone that comes off the front, but I get it.
Yeah.
You know, Stark's the mentor. Anytime Stark builds anything, he's going to go way over the top, and that's what you're going to get.
Yeah.
You know, I am kind of a purist for my Spider-Man. I would prefer to see him, you know, not be much more tech than the web shooters, but I get it, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Just maybe tone it down a little bit.
Yeah, the reason why I understood that had to happen is because like the Spider-Man that kids are watching today, he's a SHIELD recruit, so he's being hired. He's being called on to be a new Avenger, and he's leading this new Avengers team. So Nick Fury brings him on. He's basically he's the mentor in that scenario. And he gets all this tech upgrades in his suit, and you know, they bring back like what I feel is like the cheesiest aspect of Spider-Man is the spider bike, you know what I'm saying? So they bring that back, and you see like he has all these different like upgrades to his to his web shooters, which is pretty much everything that they used in the movie. You have the rapid fire web, the taser webs, all of these different kind of web shooters. You know, it's just like, you know, Spider-Man never really needed that stuff anyway. But I mean, right. It's always fun to see that stuff, like he has access to it. All right, let's see. What other character? We'll go back to the characters for a little bit and come back to the costume, because I definitely want to pick your brain about the costume, because you mentioned the voice in the costume, which I know we need to talk about.
Yeah, we definitely need to get into that a little bit. So there's only a handful of the characters really to get into.
Yeah.
I thought the Liz Allen character was fine. I thought she did a good job. But
she
I
was
also
good.
Kinda,
she was good for what she needed to be there for.
Yeah, I thought it was almost a little bit of a throwaway character outside of the scene that we kind of hinted at before.
Yeah.
She really didn't have a lot to do other than that. Now, granted, there's two major scenes where she's very important, you know, one being in the Washington Monument and the other one being the big twist scene.
Yeah.
You know, which we may or may not want to totally get into that as far as spoilers go, because that's just a great thing to see when you actually watch the movie.
Yeah.
But then again, if you're listening this far in, we've already warned you 800 times.
Yeah, we warned you that there's spoilers. So if you're listening to this, you've already watched the film. So we're going to give everything
right.
up. We are definitely going to throw everything out there.
again, another character that was kind of changed, you know, diversity-wise, but still fit the way the film worked, so there was really no issue I had with that.
Yeah.
But again, she was good. Didn't have a whole lot to do. She was good for what she had.
Yeah.
Flash.
See, now, here, I know there's two characters on this list that we're going to disagree on.
I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll have our reasons why. So, Flash. You don't Flash now.
So, Flash. One of my, I'll put it out here now. One of my issues with the movie was I thought they went a little overboard with some of the diversity changes. I get the reason behind doing that. I get the want to do that. I think some of them were unnecessary. Don't really have a problem with you changing Flash as far as his race and whatnot goes. But I think not keeping him as the dumb jock character takes away from what that character is supposed to be. Is he still kind of the asshole bully? Yes. Does that kid do it really well? Absolutely. Does he play the same as spoiled rich kid? Not really. I guess I get the point in doing it. They want to try to stay away from the whole sports jock bully routine. Maybe it hits a little too close to home these days for certain people. I don't know. I wouldn't know. I'm 42 at this point. How would I know? But I, being the kind of the purist that I tend to be, I would have preferred to have seen him at least still be the jock, you know, the bigger guy, the bigger jock jerk than, you know, the tiny little kid who, while he's really bright, you know, is just a spoiled brat.
Yeah.
You know, because somewhere down the line, Flash becomes Venom. You know, he goes to the military and he loses his legs and becomes Venom. So I don't see this kid being that type of character,
right?
You know, as far as that's concerned,
yeah.
I'll throw out my other one, and then I'll let you take the floor to tell me why I'm wrong on those two. Look, okay, Zendaya was good in the movie. I can't say she wasn't because she was good.
She was great. She was great.
She was very good as that kind of almost emo kind of outcast kid. It's been said over and over again, she's not Mary Jane. They've made it very clear that she's not Mary Jane. Her name is Michelle. She's a completely new character. But the end of the movie, she says, "My friends call me MJ, and I'm calling bullshit." You just can't, for me, and again, my opinions, this is me from my purest reasoning. Mary Jane, the real MJ, who legitimately could still show up somewhere, would be a little awkward at this point to have two MJs, but is
she
such
could be
an iconic
twin.
Character. Let's not push it on that one. That's getting into Fantastic Four adopted brother territory. She's an iconic character. Look, most of them are iconic characters.
Right.
But Mary Jane is one of those who has just always been that same character. She's the beautiful girl with the long red hair, the big green eyes, who's the girl next door, who's popular in school. Everybody knows her. Everybody wants to be with her. All the girls want to be her. You know what I mean? But deep down, she's just that, you know, sweetheart of a girl who falls in love with Peter in the long run. They get married, you know, all that stuff, and they basically stay together forever, almost. You know, it's just, for me, it's one of those characters that if you're going to put it on screen, you've got to do it as the comic character. It's just too much of an iconic out front character to change, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Did I think she was bad at what she did? No. Do I think all these people who are coming out saying she was perfection and the greatest part of the movie are right? No, I don't think she was in the movie enough for that to be the case.
Right.
Legitimately, she's in the movie for maybe 5 minutes at most of screen time. She's good in what she's in, but she's not the best part of the movie or absolutely perfect as far as the movie is concerned.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's my take. So I'll turn it to you to tell me that I'm wrong.
Okay. All right. Well, look, I'm just going to give you an alternative type of viewpoint, you know, and we'll go from there. So the Flash character was played by Tony Revolori. If you don't know who this guy is, he was one of the friends on this movie Dope. It was a like a modern day coming of age tale as well. And it was just well done. It was great. All the actors were great in there and Tony really shined. So, like, seeing him as playing Flash, at first, I really couldn't see it. I was like, oh, man, I don't know. Like, he was sort of cool and dope. Like, I liked his character. He was kind of geeky, nerdy. So, I was like, I didn't really see him as Flash. But the way that they played Flash in this movie, I think, is a powerful statement in how the bullying age has shifted. You know, the days where... You know, the days where it was always the, you know, the sports jocks that were always the bullies, the big muscly guys that were pushing the smaller guys around. That worked, you know, when Spider-Man was kind of starting out. It's like it's the same argument that challenges and says that Andrew Garfield was a good Peter Parker for that movie. Like, as far as the social outcast, the nerd that they were trying to show in Amazing Spider-Man, Andrew Garfield really portrayed that. I wanted to see more of the geek nerd, you know, intelligent social outcast, awkward, you know, trying to get into their teens type Peter Parker. And so I wasn't feeling Andrew Garfield's Peter Parker, but I understood it. For Flash, Flash in Amazing Spider-Man, I think was what everybody was kind of looking for. But Tony Revolori's Flash is the bully of today. Bullies of today are basically internet trolls. That's all. That's what who we deal with now. That's who kids are dealing with. The people that are on social media throwing shade. You know, these kids that are like Twitter gangsters. You know, they shooting off at their keyboards. You know, and that's really all it is. These kids don't really, you know, they may not be physically imposing, but they're psychologically they're destroying kids. And this the kind of spoiled brat that Tony Revolori was playing, his version of Flash. His version of Flash could, I would argue, be quintessentially what bullies are today. So you got the rich, spoiled kid, you know, that has this elitist attitude. Nobody's better than him. Everybody sucks. So he gives Peter this horrible name of Penis Parker, which... You know,
they did drive that into the ground a little more than needed to, too.
Yeah, it's like, come on, man. But that's how these modern, like, that's how bullies are today. Like, it's really like there's no wit about it. It's just, you know, I'm just going to roast you every time I see you.
It's that's just, fair. I mean, I'll give you that. That's a pretty good way to look at it. That's a fair assessment. And look, like I said, for the character that he was very good.
Yeah, definitely.
He was perfect at it. You know, including up to the scene where, you know, he's all tough guy until Spider-Man jumps in the hood of his car and then he starts to almost wet his pants.
He said, I'm sorry, you know, sir.
Sorry, sir. You know, gets out of the car and gives it up. You know, but again, I that's just my preference. I would have preferred the sports job. But I get what you're saying. Actually, what you're saying makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And it's going to go like for Zendaya's character, Michelle, I'm going to go the same type of way. Like her character is what I would consider a modern day girl next door. This, you know, kind of low key beauty that nobody would really notice. But she has this kind of snarky viewpoint on everything. And as far as how I see Mary Jane, my favorite part of Mary Jane was the fact that, and if we're thinking that she's going to be the MJ character, but they're saying that she's a new character. So I'm just going to go with it. I don't know what they're trying to do. They're just trying to mess with people. That's what I think Marvel is in the business of doing, is just messing with folk.
and I read something today that said that she's 100% is not Mary Jane, that she's right. A completely new character named Michelle. I just think giving her the MJ moniker kind of takes away from the possibility of actually having a true MJ when it came down to it. You know, I agree with you that she's kind of that, you know, modern day kid. I would have preferred maybe you make her Gwen over calling her MJ.
Yeah.
If you'd have called her Gwen, it might have fit a little better, because that's kind of more of who Emma Stone was in the Andrew Garfield movies. She was kind of that type of Gwen. She was really bright, kind of awkward. She still had some friends, still very pretty, but, you know, nobody really looked at her as the most beautiful girl, you know, in school kind of thing. I think maybe making her Gwen would have probably been a better fit.
Yeah.
Now, could they turn around and create a Mary Jane and just not call her MJ? Absolutely. It wouldn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right.
But they could. You know, so I don't really know.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, if you're going to consider her to be the MJ, you know, the whole, you know, I want to get some protesting in before, you know,
like protesting. That was such a good line.
It was funny, and it's a good line. It is, but it doesn't fit for what MJ, you know, MJ really turned out to be.
Uh huh.
So that was just kind of my issue with that. I think you could have made her, could have dubbed her something different. Yeah. Other than MJ or, you know, Michelle, whatever. You could have called her Gwen. You know, they could have spent the whole movie calling her G or something like that. And in the movie, she goes, oh, my friends call me Gwen.
Right.
You know what I mean? Something like that. And I wouldn't have had any problem with that whatsoever.
Right, right.
I really wouldn't have.
Because it,
you know, I was okay.
I mean, it may turn, okay, it may be something where it turns out that, you know, and here's another aspect that I was thinking of, too. Because it's like, you know, we still, even though we're getting Spider-Man in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I mean, still, a lot of his property is owned by Sony. So
true.
This deal was made with Sony. So they may not actually have rights to the Mary Jane character. So Michelle may be a surrogate that they're using for this particular retelling of Spider-Man. So that could be it. I don't know. Like, I'm only like surmising at this point, but it's just like.
Sure.
The other aspect, too, is like if you look at this as like a John Hughes type movie, you have the girl who's kind of like, you know, socially aware, you know, she wants to get some light protesting in, you know, she stays roasting Peter. She stays roasting Peter and Ned, like in the scenes that she's in, she stays roasting them. And I think that's a funny aspect of that's one of the aspects of Mary Jane and Peter's dynamic that I've always loved. She always kind of checked him, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I like that dynamic of their relationship. And if we're going to surmise that Michelle is the MJ of the MCU, that's something why I'm like, you know, I could see this happening. And the other aspect of this too, if they're really telling this in the vein of being like a John Hughes type movie, she could be the socially aware, like, you know, outcast character now, but these are the same characters where, like, if you're looking in this type of movie high school world, these are the type of characters where, in, you know, you come to a 20-year high school reunion, she comes back and she's a supermodel,
you right
know what I'm saying? So this yeah. is this could well be this is very well be set up for something, you know what I'm saying? So
could be,
you know, it's see. Just a, we'll it's another way of looking at it, you know, that allows me to really like Zendaya's character for who she is. So
sure. Look, yeah. I didn't dislike the character at all.
Yeah.
My issue is them dubbing her MJ at the end of the movie. That's yeah. strictly my entire issue.
Yeah.
You know, knowing who MJ is and who, my opinion of what it should be. But no, I didn't dislike the character at all. I really
yeah,
didn't.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. So,
so.
Yeah. So it was nice. I like the mix of people. Some of the secondary characters. I liked Hannibal Buress. I liked him as the coach.
He was hilarious.
He was hilarious.
Very funny.
It's like Peter leaves the room and he's like gone for 5 minutes and he's like, "Hey, where are you going? Get back here!"
Like, you know, he's the other Avengers cameo, of course, you know, that runs throughout the movie a couple of times is Cap. You know, yeah. Captain America shows up in these old school
PSAs.
You know, videos of, like, you know, the presidential fitness awards and, you know, telling people why they have to be, you know, why you have to do these things, or so you've got detention, you know, and he's wearing the, you know, original Avengers cheesy bright blue Captain America uniform.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the greatest scenes is he's you know, Cap's going on and on, and he points to the left side of the screen, or right side of the screen, going, "And your gym teacher," meanwhile, Hannibal Buress is standing on the right side of the screen, so, or left side, so Cap's pointing completely the opposite direction of where Buress is standing, and he goes through all the things, tells him, blah, 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 Buress gets in, and he goes, you know, something the effect of, "Thanks, Cap, pretty sure he's a war criminal at this point, but we'll make him play his videos," so... And he just moves on like there's nothing, just a deadpan, like nothing to it. Hilarious throwaway line.
Yeah.
And he was just great.
He was great.
He's just that high school gym teacher who was just giving up on life and just wants to get through his day and get his paycheck and does not care.
Yep.
And he was great.
He was great.
You know, and the other kind of throwaway character for me who was great, of course, is Happy Hogan.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Fantastic that it's Jon Favreau coming back to reprise his role,
so
you know, basically playing an overpaid babysitter, you know, with another one of the greatest lines in the whole movie. You know, the other pretty much completely throwaway cameo that still not quite sure why or how they ended up getting into it, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Gwyneth Paltrow makes a return to the MCU, which everybody thought she was never going to do.
Right.
But Gwyneth Paltrow shows up as Pepper Potts at the very end, you know. There's supposed to be a big, you know, it's a big scene between Peter and Tony Stark. Tony shows him this new costume, you know, that's supposed to be, I think maybe supposed to be the Iron Spider costume. Personally, I think the one he shows at the end of the movie is kind of ugly. You know, Peter thinks it's a test. He turns it down. He says, you know, "I want to stay on the ground. I want to be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man for a little bit longer." You know, but Tony's saying, you know, "Put on the suit. Come up behind this door. There's 50 reporters going to introduce Spider-Man as the newest member of the Avengers," you know, blah, blah, blah. And Peter turns him down. And Tony immediately is like offended, like, "Turning me down?" You know, kid walks away and he goes, "Wait a minute. This is a test, wasn't it, Mr. Stark?" "Yeah, yeah, yeah. You passed. Kid walks away.
Let's get out of here.
The door opens up. There's really nobody behind that door, is there? No. You passed. Kid walks away. Door opens up. There's a whole room full of reporters. Out walks Pepper. You know, "Where's the kid? You guys screw this up already?" She's yelling at the two of them instantly. And immediately, Stark's response, "Happy told him to go wait in the car." And just Teflon's right over to Happy. Happy's like, "Wait a minute. You know, what are we going to tell all these paparazzi in there?" And Stark says, you know, "Well, maybe we could," you know, he turns to Happy and says, you got the, you know, the ring? The engagement ring?" And Happy pulls it out of his pocket and says, "Oh, of course, I've had this in my pocket since 2008. Of course, reference back to, I guess, Iron Man 2, you know, as far as, was it Iron Man 3? No, it was Iron Man, probably Iron Man 2.
Was it Iron Man 2? I thought.
I don't think it was Iron Man 1.
I thought 08 was, no, 08, no, 08 was Iron Man 3.
Was it?
Be,
okay.
It had to be Iron Man 3, because 2000 was Iron Man, I think.
I don't remember. I don't remember the years. But either way, it's very funny that it's a throwback to that movie saying, "I've been holding on to this damn thing for, you know, 10 years or whatever it would have been at that point." Just a very funny, very quick little line, you know, and it's great. Everett's just so good as that character.
Yeah.
You know, he's just so pleased with himself over things and then getting screwed up anyway. You know, he's just such a good person to be in there. It's just a good fit for that role.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. The 2008 reference was to the first Iron Man. That's when all this kicked off. Yeah. That's crazy.
So,
yeah, man, I definitely love that line. That was awesome. That was an awesome little moment. It was good to see Gwyneth Paltrow in there again. I'm trying to think of any other secondary characters that I really liked. Oh, you know, there was a secondary character that I liked that you know who he was, but he wasn't who we know him to be yet. And that was, what was his name?
Well, the actor is Donald Glover.
Not him yet. No.
Oh, not him. Okay.
I don't consider Donald Glover's character, I didn't consider to be like a secondary kind of like throwaway type character. Oh,
then you're going for the Scorpion. You're going for
Matt
Gargan.
Yeah, I'm going for the Scorpion. Okay.
Yeah.
He pops on there and you see him with the little scorpion tattoo and they say his name and it's like, oh, I know that guy.
Yep. You know, they throw the name out there. The first Matt throw the Gargan. Name out there because they're on the barge for the, you know, the weapons deal.
Yeah.
And the little drone Spider-Man has, you know, recognizes him as Matt Gargan. And, you know, if you follow the comics, which most of us do, you know Matt Gargan was another character. They kind of change a little bit. You know, Matt Gargan in the comics is this older bald white guy who's a washed up private detective, you know, which wouldn't have fit in the situation at all.
Nah.
So that's one that was well changed, and they changed to the actor's name I don't know. I know he's on Better Call Saul, and he's pretty good on that too.
Yeah. And the actor's name was let me see, where is he at? Michael Mando.
And he's good. You know, I think looks, you know, the post credit scene, of course, you know, they have, you know, Tomb survives, which is another great thing that they actually had a villain who survives the movie, you know, and he's in prison and he, you know, runs across Scorpion, you know, who you see again. So kind of leading to the possibility that they might start looking at potentially, you know, a Sinister Six for the MCU. You know, you've got enough characters that you've started with, you know, who could lead there. You've got at least four, you know, could potentially start making up part of the six with the Scorpion, the Vulture, Tinker and Shocker. You know, all it takes is, you know, adding two more people if you want to do a Sinister Six.
Yep.
You know, and go from there. I would love to see them add a Mysterio or, you know, I would imagine maybe Doc Ock at some point might make some kind of appearance, that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, I've heard,
you know, it's a great little scene.
Yeah, I've heard mention of Mysterio making an appearance eventually.
I would love to see Mysterio.
Yeah.
I would. You know what? If you're going to ask, my ultimate wish would be that Aquaman flops. And harsh to say, but would be that Aquaman flops so that Jason Momoa can come to the Marvel Universe and be Kraven the Hunter.
Yes.
Because there's not a single actor in Hollywood that would be a better Kraven the Hunter than Jason Momoa.
There's only one other person perfect that I could actually see as Kraven other than Jason Momoa. I don't remember if you saw it or not. Did you see The Equalizer with Denzel Washington?
I don't believe I did.
There's a character on there. Let me see if I can find
him. Did actually just think of another actor who might not be bad as Kraven, although he's getting a little bit older.
Right.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Ooh,
might be pretty good as a Kraven the Hunter.
Yeah. I was thinking, okay, so the actor's name is Martin Sokas. And he plays this dark character on Equalizer. I mean, he's covered in tattoos and like just death and destruction is all this man creates in this movie. And he has this thick accent, just reminds me of Kraven the Hunter.
Okay.
Yeah. So he would definitely be my second choice if you know, we can't get Aquaman.
He was in Lord of the Rings too. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
He's the Elf King.
Yep. So if you hear his accent, kind of sounds like Kraven. He's kind of sounds like Kraven in some of the animated takes I've seen on him.
So, yeah.
So let's dive in. Let's dive into you know, another character we saw in here who had like probably the single most greatest scene for me in that entire movie.
Uh-oh. Okay.
And it was only because it was just comedic gold for me. And that was Donald Glover scene where he comes in.
You're talking about Donald Glover.
Yeah. So he comes in. So we see him as Aaron Davis, who I hope they go down that route.
Well, so, I'm pretty sure they will. Actually, there's two routes they can go down with that character, but right. And they both would be the same character. So, you know, I get the feeling they're going to do that. You know, of course, the one route being creating the Prowler.
Yep.
Which, you know, they kind of already leaned to, because I think at one point somebody said they call him the Prowler. They reference him as a Prowler. I think in one of like I can't remember. Like one of the little drone scenes, I think, is probably one of the ones where they actually reference him as a Prowler.
Yeah.
But in the scene under the bridge where they're looking through everything that's in the truck, the guy says something to the effect of, you know, I have these special climbing devices. And he goes, oh, you got climbing devices? Like he kind of makes that move before Peter's phone goes off and screws up the whole thing. Like he makes that reference like he really could turn out to be the Prowler.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you know, the other reference, of course, that he makes there is he mentions the fact that I've got a nephew in the city. I want him to be safe.
Yep.
And if you read anybody reads the modern day comics, you know that, of course, the reference to the nephew is Miles Morales, the modern day Spider-Man.
Yes.
Which would be a very interesting addition. I can't see them bringing him in anytime soon.
Right.
But I definitely could see them bring him in somewhere down the line. As a new Spider-Man to add, probably be a little confusing, but this will be a new Spider-Man to add to the MCU, which would be a very, very interesting setup.
Yeah.
Again, listening to Kevin Smith and Mark Bernardin's Fat Man on Batman, they're discussing Miles, and they're discussing the suit at the end that Tony is offering to Peter. Kevin Smith saying, you know, I have no inside information. This is purely, you know, hypothetical on my part, or not hypothetical, but conjecture. On my part, he believes that that suit at the end will end up on Miles Morales because it looks a little more like Miles' suit. Doesn't look exactly like it, but it's a darker suit. It's a darker blue, you know, to match Miles' black suit. You know, and potentially you could see that becoming Miles' suit as opposed to Peter's.
Right.
In the long run, I could see something like that happening.
Yeah, because if it boils down to it, and you know. We have to worry about separate, like Sony, you know, gets greedy and maybe wants to take back, you know, the Peter Parker Spider-Man and use Tom Holland in their movies. It could possibly go like down the route. We might see the MCU use Miles Morales as their focus, you know, or vice versa. You know what I'm saying? It could be something where they set up Miles Morales to be the Spider-Man of the Sony universe. And, you know, we get Peter Parker, you know, so. That would be interesting.
Yeah. I could see it. I mean, I could definitely see them going something along those lines for sure.
Yeah,
it'd be interesting. I mean, I do believe at some point, you'll see Morales come in, whether it's a side character, whether it's as a new Spider-Man, who knows? But I do believe you'll see the character pop up at some point.
Yeah. So next. You know, we talked about the characters a little bit, but I definitely want to dive in to Spider-Man's costume because there's a lot of aspects of that costume that need to be explored, and namely the voice that talks to him.
Yes. One of my all-time favorites. Love that woman. You know, the voice, of course, is Jennifer Connelly, which kind of came out maybe like the week before the movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
That the article started to come out that said she was going to be some kind of role in the movie.
Right.
Nobody really quite knew who she was going to be or where she was going to be, where she could show up. And then, you know, maybe right before the movie came out, they said, okay, she's going to be the voice in his suit. And she's really good. Like, it's just an excellent job, you know, of her being in that, in the suit, being his voice and being, you know, almost like the mentor when Tony's not around, you know, that's kind of helping him learn the suit and learn who he is, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, at one point he, you know, Peter goes and he disables all the training wheels protocol that Tony has in place, preventing him from being able to do all the stuff in his suit.
Yeah.
You know, he takes off the tracker that Stark has on him to keep track of him, you know, and then all of a sudden the suit can do a bazillion different things. And the suit, being an AI, assumes that he's passed all the tests and he's allowed to have this, which of course we find out he's not, you know, and it's just, it's kind of a cool interaction between the two of them, you know, with her basically coming to life, you know, cause she doesn't even really know what her name is. You know, he gives her a name, Karen, I think it's Karen.
And, yeah, he gives her the name Karen.
Gives him Karen, and he Karen becomes his friend. You know, he talks to Karen about Liz, and he talks to Karen about what he should do. You know, and it's a fun addition to it. You know, I think potentially could turn into something else somewhere down the line.
Right.
Could turn into the character known as Jocasta, who used to be in the books, who we know already is a Tony Stark AI from Age of Ultron. It's one of the discs he picks up and puts back down before he puts Friday in his armor. And I think the biggest giveaway to her potentially becoming Jocasta is the fact that she is married to Paul Bettany, who, as people who follow the series know at this point, Paul Bettany was Jarvis and is now the Vision. So I could see that kind of being one of those little spoilers that kind of, or not necessarily spoilers, but one of those little things that they end up doing at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
To actually bring her to life and make her Jocasta, I think would be awesome.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
Would be a cool little spin.
Yeah, definitely would. Because it's like it. I always notice that when Marvel uses a voice, if the voice is recognizable, 9 times out of 10 you'll see them again. They're on for a specific reason.
Yep.
So I wouldn't be surprised if we see her sign on for this, and she becomes something. She actually manifests as an actual physical character in the universe. So that doesn't sound too far fetched. Like, I could definitely see that happening. Yeah.
I think we're going to end up heading in that direction. I really do.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man.
But, so, I mean, like I said, I thought, while I liked the suit, I think it was a little too high-tech for Spider-Man, but I get it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a Stark suit. It's going to be over the top.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good. Yeah, because I'm thinking, like, the way that they're trying to do this is like, yeah, they want to give Pete as much credit as they can. And I think they did a good job of that by having him get stripped of that suit and then go back to the original.
Right.
Which I really loved the original. It felt like the Scarlet Spider. But I like the fact that he had to go back to that suit and go back to his original way of getting things done. But the powered suit is definitely a step up, but having him go back to the original definitely demonstrates how powerful of a hero Peter Parker actually is.
Yep, absolutely.
Because that whole scene where he eventually confronts Vulture after that heavy scene in the car, he comes in there and Vulture basically collapsed the building on Peter. Mm-hmm. And you watch him like just struggle. He's like freaking out at first. Like, he's freaking out. Like, who wouldn't freak out in a situation like that? He's basically being crushed, and he's like, he's just all, you don't know if he's just gonna give up here. And he basically lifts like a third of that building off of his back, which is crazy.
Right. Well, and it's that whole, so that's kind of taken from an old Spider-Man series, an old comic, that whole imagery where he's lifting basically the ceiling of a building that fell on him off the top of him. But the imagery and the scene that's so awesome is, like you said, he's trapped and he instantly becomes a kid, a little kid.
Yeah.
Trapped under stuff, assuming he's going to die and he's not going to find a way out.
Yeah.
And it's that moment where he looks down because he's taken the mask off and he's thrown it, you know, kind of out of fear and kind of trying to catch his breath. And it's the image of, you know, half the mask, half of him. And it's the whole idea of, like, he gets in the argument with Stark earlier in the movie where Stark says, if you're nothing without the suit, then you shouldn't have it. And it's that kind of that moment where he's looking down and he sees half his own face, half the suit's face, where he realizes, this is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need the suit. I am Spider-Man. I am this hero. I can do this. And he musters up the power, and he pushes the whole thing off him, and he goes after the Vulture. And it's just a really strong moment, a really strong image of that. You know, normally in the comics for years and years and years, anytime Spidey sense would go off, you know, when he's Peter or You know, anytime something would strike him funny, it was always that same thing. It was half the mask, half him, you know, in multiple panels, probably millions at this point.
Yeah.
But it's that first moment, I think, he realizes Stark is right. He doesn't need the suit to be who he is. They're both the same person. Spider-Man is Peter Parker. Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And that's the moment that he has to put it all on the line, become the hero to save not only himself, but to save everybody else, you know, and move on. And it's just, it's an amazingly powerful scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
And only topped, of course, by the one thing we kind of keep dancing around.
Right.
Probably the best scene, maybe the best way for us to go out here. The best scene in the entire movie. Peter gets his wish. He gets to take Liz to the homecoming dance. Mm-hmm. He's all excited. Aunt May teaches him how to dance. You know, she gets him all gussied up. He gets the
corsage.
Corsage, thank you. Yeah. Boutonniere. Good Lord. Hold my. And then he goes to the door. He knocks on the door of Liz's home. Door opens up, and who's standing in front of him? But Adrian Toomes, the Vulture.
Dun, dun, dun.
And exactly. And his face goes from pure joy to abject terror.
Yeah.
The blink of an eye. Because he now realizes he's staring at the one person he's trying to stop. And he puts two and two together and he realizes this is her dad.
Yeah.
This is... Oh my God, Liz's dad. You know, it's a mixed race couple, which I certainly didn't see coming.
I didn't see coming, but as soon as you see them on screen together, it's like, oh yeah, she's their daughter.
Sense. Yep. Makes perfect sense. And it's just such a great scene because now Peter goes from being relaxed, happy-go-lucky Peter Parker to being stiff as a board. And scared out of his mind.
Can't take his eyes off him.
So, can't take his eyes off him. And it's so tense.
Yeah.
And Toomes is staring back at him like, what the hell's your problem? You know, and it's just all kinds of nervous. And then, you know, Toomes is, you know, oh, I'm your ride. Let's get, you know, let's go Pedro. You know, he's calling him Pedro. He's trying to, you know, be joking around, be friends with him. And Parker's not batting an eyelash. And he's, you can feel him starting to sweat.
Yeah.
Just standing there in front of what is basically his arch nemesis at this point, because it's the only villain he's ever really known. And he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know how to react. He tries to get out of it, tries to tell him, you don't have to drive us. Toomes says, no, 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 I got you. Let's get in the car. And then the scene switches to the car, which is equally as tense. Peter's not moving a muscle. He's sitting in the back seat. Liz tries to show him something that she thinks is really cute in the phone, and he's like, like barely can muster the strength to say that. And as the three of them start talking, Toomes starts putting one and one together.
Yep.
Or he realizes this 15-year-old kid sitting in the back of his car next to his daughter is the kid who's trying to stop his livelihood, trying to stop him from keeping his family safe, trying to stop him from being the villain. And it just takes just this almost Silence of the Lambs feel.
Yeah.
You know, Hannibal Lecter talking to Clarice Starling switch where, you know, they pull up to the school and Toomes says to Liz, you know, you go ahead inside. I'm going to give Pete the dad talk, you know, ha ha ha. She gets out of the car. He immediately pulls a pistol out of the glove box and says, does she know? You know, and the back and forth between two of them. Peter's like, I know what you're talking about. And he's like, so she doesn't know. Good. You know, and basically threatens Peter. And that scene, you've seen the commercials where he says, I will kill you. I will kill everyone who matters to you. I will kill everyone and anyone to keep my family safe. And it's just this amazing, amazing,
amazing.
He literally gets Spider-Man to say, thank you for not killing me. It's unbelievable.
It's chilling. It's chilling. Like the whole theater was quiet. Like,
yeah.
And I can't remember exactly or not, but I don't remember any music playing until they stopped the car.
I don't think there is. Yeah, I don't think there is at all.
The whole scene is like silent. Like as soon as the door opens, like the music kind of just stops.
Yep.
And it's just like,
I don't think
I've ever been like, I've been to movies where I know that there's like a big twist going to happen and you can see it coming. Like, you know, it's coming. So you can prepare yourself. You're like, hey, oh man, I know such and such did this.
Yep.
But this, I did not see coming at all.
No idea. Nope.
So when he opens the door, I'm floored. Yo. I mean,
nonchalantly.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, oh my God.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that scene, I definitely would rank as my favorite scene in the entire movie. Because it's down. Just chilling and haunting.
Look, I love the action of the Staten Island Ferry scene.
Yeah.
With him trying to break up the, you know, the weapons deal and the FBI agents popping up and him trying to save everybody as the boat splits in half and he doesn't quite get there. And it takes Iron Man to show up to save him. You know, and then the scene following that between him and Stark is great.
Yeah.
With Stark, you know, him yelling at the armor because he doesn't think Stark's inside and all of a sudden it pops up. And he steps out, and you're kind of like, uh-oh.
Dad's here.
You know what I mean? Yep. You know, and it's a great little scene, the two of them back and forth. It's cool. Yeah. It's amazing Robert Downey Jr. It's amazing Tom Holland. Does not hold a candle to this scene with the two of them.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, like you said, it's just such a chilling, like, you feel like, almost like you're the one being threatened.
Yeah.
You know, like. Literally saying to you, if you mess with my family, I will absolutely kill you.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like, even though it's the bad guy and he's threatening to kill the hero, you look at the scene, you're going, I get it. I understand why he's the way that he is.
Yep.
I understand why he's threatening him. And I kind of can appreciate it. I kind of can understand and go with it. It's just such an amazing, incredible scene.
Yeah.
Between the two of them, you know, I could talk about it forever. It's just so good, you know, because then the scene ends and here's Peter and he has to make what is essentially the toughest decision of his 15-year-old life.
Yeah.
Do I let it go, stay with the girl that I want, and live my life and just, you know, pretend I didn't see anything, or do I be the hero?
Yeah.
Do I ruin everything around me? And try to stop him from, basically try to stop him from protecting his family. But by protecting his family, he's hurting others.
Right.
And as is expected, in a perfect Peter Parker, Spider-Man moment, he has to choose to be the hero. And he chooses to be the hero. And he says to her, I'm sorry, you don't deserve this.
Yep.
You know, meaning so many couple different things, you know, meaning, you don't deserve me treating you this way, but you also don't deserve to have your father, you know, kind of do this to you.
Right.
You know what I mean? You don't deserve to have a father who's going to only provide for you by being a bad man kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the last portion of the movie takes off, you know, like we talked about with him attacking, you know, the fight with the vulture. And it's just such an incredible, maybe 5-10 minutes of a movie. I could watch it over and over. It's like previous to this, my favorite Marvel scene of all the movies still involves, it's funny, it still involves Tom Holland, but it's with Robert Downey Jr. when Robert Downey Jr. comes to see him for the first time as Peter.
He's
alone with him in the bedroom. And just that moment where Parker's going, you know, when you can do what I do and you don't and the bad things happen, I forget the exact line.
One of my favorite lines. Then it's your fault.
It's your fault. Something to that effect. Yeah. And it's, you know what he's referring to.
Yep.
Anybody who knows the movies knows that he's referring to the fact that he becomes Spider-Man. He lets this guy go and the guy ends up killing his Uncle Ben, who was the most important person in the world to him. And he feels like it's his fault. It's just a powerful scene. One of my favorites of all time. This scene takes over for that scene and becomes my new powerful most favorite. It's just so intense. It's just amazing.
Yeah, definitely.
How many times am I going to say amazing?
But
it's just truth. You know, it's truth. It's just all such, it's so great.
It's amazing.
When you're talking about Spider-Man, it's hard not to say amazing.
amazing, spectacular, you know,
ultimate. Exactly.
all of the above. Yeah,
man. All of the above for sure.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those films that you want to see. You want to see multiple times. You're going to want, like, as soon as this thing comes out on Blu-ray, I'm thinking I'm getting it in whatever multi-layered edition it's going to be in. Blu-ray 3D Ultra with 4K. I don't know. I'm just going to get
hands down. Yep, absolutely. I will have it first day I can. No doubt in my mind.
And what it really does for me, like, honestly, this movie just solidifies the fact that Marvel is a cinematic powerhouse right now. They are in full stride. Like, this is not, we're not watching them work up to something. This is Marvel at its best. And at the end of the day, like, they know exactly what they're doing. They're in it now. Like, this is business as usual. So I can't front, like, any movie that's coming out. It makes me even more excited for Black Panther now, you know, because, like, look, I saw that trailer. I still watch that trailer like once a week. Like, I need you guys to understand that. Like, once a week, I watch Black Panther trailer. So,
dude, look, we gotta get to Ragnarok first. Let's do this in the order. We gotta get to Ragnarok first.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. A little Thor movie, Hulk, yeah, whatever. But I'm with you. Panther looks like it's gonna be an amazing, amazing flick. Yeah. Ragnarok looks like it's gonna be an amazing.
Yeah, flick. I mean, like, this is really good. Like Spider-Man is really setting the tone. Like, moving forward, this is the kind of caliber of film we're gonna be getting. You know what I'm saying? And then now you're saying Spider-Man is going to be taking the lead in your next phase on this all new Marvel Cinematic Universe that we're going to be getting. Like, I'm in. Take my money now. Can I invest? In like, can I give you like $1,000 so that way I can get all the merchandise, get all the movie tickets just up front?
I'm with you. I mean, 100%. You know, I think they've, you know, with the last couple movies we've seen, they've set such a precedence as far as quality for the movie. You know, Guardians 2, Spider-Man, you know, what looks to be, you know, an amazing movie in Ragnarok. Mm-hmm. I just can't see this quality getting any worse. I really can't.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're hiring the right people. They're spending the money where they need to spend it. They're bringing in the actors they need to bring in. Thank God, you brought in Jeff Goldblum and Benicio del Toro to play the Grandmaster and the Collector.
Yeah.
They're spending the money to bring in these amazing actors, these fantastic actors who are just going to take over, you know, just going to take over the roles.
Yep.
And be incredible. So yep. I think Marvel's hitting its stride, and I think it's going to be an amazing ride going forward. Will there be some potential letdown after Infinity War? Maybe.
Yeah.
Depending on what they come out with, you know, if they get Fantastic Four or, you know, where they're going to go, who's leaving, who's staying.
Yeah. Always got to leave room. Always got to leave room and prepare for the worst.
You know, but it's the build has been for Infinity War. That's what the build has been. And it's hitting its crest. That swell is hitting its crest right now.
Yeah.
You know, we're almost at the peak and we're almost at Infinity War. You know, it's going to have to come down a little bit after that. But it's going to be such an amazing ride to that point. Anything beyond that is just going to be, okay, what's next?
Yeah.
You know, exactly. I think it's going to be amazing. God, I can't stop saying stupid words. I think it's going to be incredible.
Amazing.
I've probably said it 100 times if I said it once in this podcast. It's so stupid because it's the amazing Spider-Man. I just can't stop saying it. Maybe it's my crutch. I don't know. But, yeah, I can't wait till our buddy Nick hears this. I'm going to hear about that. The fact that I've said amazing a billion times.
The roasting will be prime.
Hopefully he doesn't listen. But yeah, we're in for a hell of a ride.
Yeah,
we're in for a hell of a ride for sure. So
definitely. Well, that's it, folks. That's all we got for you today. I mean, we are hitting pretty much on the 2-hour mark on this review. So
yeah,
we're killing it. We're crushing it hard. So, you know, keep following us. You know, we got our page on Facebook. Hit us with a like on Facebook. We got a Twitter page, The Boss's Desk. We post articles there from time to time. And then just visit us on our website, thebossesdesk.com. We're posting regularly. This will be up there. And we'll We'll definitely be showcasing this. We got our YouTube page, which where our podcasts are going to be housing, going to be housed. So just look for that. And any updates, we'll always send you guys notes so you'll know. So thanks for listening, man. This is Big Boss and this is Professor signing off.
Good buddy.
All right, latest.